Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Daugherty, founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop, and I'd like to personally invite you to learn more about how you can be involved in this powerful three-day intensive.
The next Gateway to Freedom Workshop is coming up January 21st through the 23rd.
So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Daugherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad you decided to join us today. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with my friend Stephen. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, we're glad to welcome you to the new year, 2011. This is pretty exciting times in our history and in our world, and we hope that this year really proves to be an outstanding year for you personally, and as you grow in purity and seek to improve your relationships. And that's really what we're going to do. We're into part two of this series that we started in last week's broadcast, where we were talking about action steps for making your relationships better. And we hope that that's one of the goals that you have this year, is to improve your relationships. If you're married, to improve your marriage relationship. If you've got friends and family members that you'd like to improve your relationship with, a lot of the principles that we're going to talk about here are universal, even though we're really highlighting a marriage union and a marriage relationship for these behaviors that you can be involved in to improve your relationship. So why don't we just pick up where we left off, and Stephen, why don't you take it from there?
Okay, so I'm just going to start a whole new list, even though it's continuation, but if you weren't in on the last one, you'll be lost. So the first one today is, and better back up a minute, this is really encouragement of steps that men can take, or women, but we lean towards men, pushing men to step it up, the steps that men can take to grow a greater relationship. So number one in today's talk is reading self-help books. I cannot tell you how helpful that is. If somebody writes a book, it usually has a number of good ideas in it. Even bad books have some decent ideas. I mean, poorly written books. But if somebody is going to write a book, it means they've done research, they've talked to experts, they pull together information. And so people say, well, which one should I read? And if you have a sexual problem, then you read on purity. And if you have an anger problem, you read on anger. And so whatever your topic is, determine that you're on a personal mission to ask God to put some books in your hands to help grow you So start reading on the topic.
And I think along with that, as you're reading on a topic, it's important in your relationship to talk about what you're reading, to share about what you're reading. You know, one of the things that my wife and I have done periodically is, you know, I'll be reading on one particular topic. She likes to read, probably about 10% of her reading would be considered self-help type stuff. The rest of it is entertainment type reading. For me, you just flip those numbers. You know, I'm much more of, and part of it's just the ministry I'm in. I'm very interested in what's out there. But, you know, it's one thing to be reading a self-help book and that has a certain aspect of help that you can get. But then when you start discussing it in your relationship, you start talking with your spouse about it, it can draw a lot more out of it, I think, because, you know, I'm only going to come from a male perspective. I'm only going to come from my own history. I'm only going to come from my own experiences. If I just start sharing what I'm reading with my wife, guess what? She brings her female perspective in. She brings her history, her experiences. And all of a sudden, what I've been reading from one very one-dimensional perspective starts to have more flavor. And actually, she might even be able to point out things that were erroneous in the book that I didn't recognize from my perspective. And we can start having a dialogue and a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so before you realize it, what you're reading in a self-help book about helping you with anger or you with purity, it becomes enriched by including this other person in the dialogue. And I think the same is true with whatever she's reading. You can talk about those things.
And go back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how many women will come into my office and say, I have a whole bookshelf of books that I'd like him to read, but he won't read them. It's like, she's already done all the work. You got to just pull that book off the shelf and read 2 pages a night. It's okay if you're a slow reader, but you got to read, you know? The saying, readers are leaders. Readers have ideas. They glean ideas out of books, and they go, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good principle. I like that concept.
And you know what? Here's the dirty little secret about if you start reading more, you'll be better prepared for starting and continuing conversations.
Because you'll have ideas?
Because you don't have to be the one to just come up with some idea. You read something in a book, you read a particular sentence, and you go, that's insightful. Guess what? Just repeat that. Just memorize it and repeat it to your wife. And there you've got a conversation starter. Honey, I just read this in this book. What do you think about this statement? There you go. You're off and running. You don't have to be... Reading can actually help you interact with your spouse more.
Yes.
Because you don't have to be the one to come up with all the one-liners and the conversation starters and all the ideas.
You gave me a book recently called The Unique Church.
Church Unique, yeah.
Church Unique. And I was reading in that, and the author said he had read somewhere else. He's referring to a different author. And he said that author made the statement, I don't want to be king. I want to be a king maker. Mm-hmm. And that just resonated with me because I don't want to be the star, the man out front, the man that leads. I want to be the developer of men.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that fits with this ministry. I appreciate that book. And I think that illustrates exactly what you just said. You'll grab a concept that, and I think it focused me. I don't have to be the king. I want to be a king maker. I want to make a bunch of leaders by pouring into them and helping them mature and helping them better in relationships and in their community and their church and with their children, and on. So that's part of, I'm now playing back the principle of sharing this new concept that somebody else had. And I was reading an article about reading. And they said, reading is not a natural experience. You must be trained because your brain doesn't just naturally think A, B, C, D. You have to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to make your brain put these letters together into words and these words into concepts. It's not natural to read. And so that's why it doesn't feel natural for some men to read, because it's not like eating is a natural function. Breathing is a natural, going for a walk or picking up something is dropped is a natural function. But reading is a practice skill.
But remember, like we said last week, listeners, we're talking about doing certain behaviors to make your relationship better. And by doing those behaviors, you will eventually discover and hopefully appreciate the principle behind the behavior. So reading self-help books and sharing them with your spouse, that's the behavior. Just read some self-help books and start sharing them with your spouse.
Yeah, you don't have to want to. You don't have to find this deep desire. Just do what you're told, men.
And then what's interesting is over time, the principle behind it of your life being enriched, you gaining insights, you growing emotionally and spiritually and even academically, the principle behind that will start to rise up, and also the principle behind it of being able to enrich your relationship, mm-hmm. enrich your spouse with the insights that you've learned. You can start to discover that, but you got to just get off the couch and do it. You know, you just have to start doing these behaviors.
Yes. And so the third point would be make small steps of change. We all want to do a big thing. We all want to win a lottery and have this major change. We want to grow a big church from a little church. We want to have a big house from a little house. We want big things to happen quickly. No, just make small steps of change in the direction you want to go into.
Yeah, and this can be any number of things. I mean, you know, I'm thinking right now in terms of my own life, okay, I need to get a little bit healthier. And this would, by me getting healthier, I think it would increase my energy level with my spouse and my kids, and I'd have more energy to do more activities with them. Well, rather than me saying, okay, I'm gonna join a gym and I'm gonna go all organic food and I'm gonna go, you know,
and run a marathon.
You know what I've decided to do? I've started taking a couple more vitamin supplements and trying to reduce the caffeine and drink a little more water. That's a start.
Those are great small steps.
Small
right.
changes.
Yes.
I'll work on diet issues, exercise. I'll be able to add to that slowly, but just start somewhere and start small, and then you can kind of gain some momentum, gain a little confidence. And the same thing is true in your relationship. We've talked about a lot of principles or a lot of activities last time, but even this, again, this reading, start small. Read one chapter a night, or maybe two pages, or just commit to something that you can start doing regularly and stick to it.
So number four would be recognize that we all have a selfish part of our being. And I don't know, sometimes we have to take care of ourselves. We have to brush our teeth and floss between those teeth. We have to take baths. We have to really do things for ourselves, eat healthy. But it's when the self becomes too much, too supersized the self, or obese self, too much self, that there's a problem. So we need to find that balance of doing what you need to do to take time to read and grow yourself, but then also recognize that we do selfish things and they consume us and consume time and resources and they take from others, and that's not good.
You know, and I think part of that is whenever we are acting in those selfish ways, we're isolating ourselves from relationships. We're distracting from the point of relationship, which is bonding and really growing in that closeness. And in this next activity that we can be involved in, it's really plays into this idea of dealing with the selfishness, because we need to have, as men, we need to be consciously thinking of our wives in a way in which they're a queen. They are essentially of royalty in our home. And I think it's very easy in the busyness of our lives, it's very easy with what the culture has done to strip away value from women and make them nothing more than an object to be observed sexually, that
worker or a cleaning lady.
Yeah, we need to build up our wives as royalty before our children, before anyone who comes in contact with us as far as our social lives, that she is to be adored by us and just honored by us in how we speak to her and about we speak about her and how we treat her and how we engage with her.
And if she's the queen, who's the king? If you treat your wife like the queen, who is the king?
The King of Kings.
The King of Kings, that's right. And then we are the servants, right? That's good. That's excellent. So rolling with that new view of your wife, treating her like royalty, like a queen, then there, the reality is she needs help, someone to help her with difficult times, when she breaks down, falls down, when she slows down, she needs someone there caring for her.
And let's talk about that for a little bit, because these next two, talking about really needing to care for my wife and then also and just taking better care of her. Let's talk about this issue, because I think this is something that we don't talk about enough in our culture, but also even on this radio program, as we talk about sexuality. I think there's this tendency, for the moment we start talking about sex and sexuality, the pictures that pop up are of youthfulness. Our culture is all about...
Oh, that's good. That's
when,
right.
When we talk about sexuality, the culture is completely wrapped around youthfulness as it pertains to sexuality. But the reality is we are all growing older. We are all decaying.
Yes.
And so what I want to try to say in this part of growing a better relationship is seeing sexuality not attached to an age, but attached to your spouse. In other words, sexuality is not something that is to be perpetually associated with youthfulness, but it is in my marriage to be perpetually associated with my wife. So in other words, as she grows older, as her body decays, as her body changes, she is still a sexual being. She is still my sexual partner. And so in that sense, sexuality remains constant. Sexuality remains beautiful. Sexuality remains a part of our relationship, even as the dynamic of our bodies changes.
Then your sexuality matures also, right? As the bodies mature, you're saying.
And I think that's a new perspective we need to have. If we're going to really make our marriage relationships better, we have got to break away from this cultural notion that sexuality is only attached to the young and that sexuality can only be beautiful and expressed in youthfulness.
Yes, and that's always kind of frustrated me when you watch television. It's like people fall in love, but there are very few shows where they mature that love. It's always about falling in love and falling in love and meeting somebody and falling in love. But boy, that's such a narrow part of life. But it's an exciting part. But you're saying we have to carry that same energy and excitement and usefulness of mind even into our senior years.
And realizing that beauty is not... The beauty of our sexuality and the beauty in our marriage union is not totally connected to our physical bodies.
Yes.
And that's what you're talking about. Maturing love is love that begins to go much deeper than whatever your bodies can or cannot do.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean that you're devoid of sexual expression. It doesn't mean that at some point, well, guess what? Sexuality just leaves. And that's what the culture teaches. The culture says, hey, you're 50. You're too old. You better just get a pill. You better get something to, you know, some sort of aid to help you. And it's like, I've often wondered, what is that really teaching us? It's saying that sex can only be enjoyable and expressed in one particular way, and that's through youthfulness.
That's good. So let me put the next two together. And so they are enjoying or taking enjoyment in seeing her happy and enjoyment in making her happy. Just finding yourself pleased, tickled, delighted that your wife is happy. I think that's a statement of maturity and health and wholeness, rejoicing in the joy of others. You know, not wanting to tear down or minimize, but rather rejoicing, taking joy in the prospering of others, the advancement of others. I mean, that's true love, celebrating when she moves ahead, when she wins.
And I think that feeds right into the next one of just learning how to feel happier and more satisfied. In other words, learning to be content. You know, that's another thing that's so countercultural in our society, contentment. Everything. I mean, I dare you to find anything, any advertisement that is not appealing to your dissatisfaction in life. I mean, think about it. Every single advertisement is about saying you're dissatisfied unless you buy this product. Your life is not complete unless you have this car, unless you have this computer, unless you have this particular thing. You are a dissatisfied, wretched being unless you have this. I mean, that's, and so part of, I think, improving your relationships is in the context of whatever relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a marriage, whatever, is sort of realizing you can be content. You can still be growing that relationship, but you can also be content in it.
There was an ad about a vehicle, and the kid was saying, "Don't be a nerd parent and drive this old car. No, drive this car." And I thought to myself, how insulting that is.
Yeah.
Look, the parents buy whatever car they can. And does it help if their kids call them nerds for driving whatever they can drive?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of an offensive ad to me. And so you're saying, and I'm playing off that principle of contentment, be glad that you have a vehicle, because lots of people in this world don't have a vehicle to drive. So I think along the journey, we must also decide to give our wives a second chance. Because they have disappointed us, let us down, failed us. They've been so human on this journey that sometimes we build walls of resentment and we go, well, I'll never forgive you, or I can't believe that. I'm not. But I think our God is a God of second chances, right? Mm-hmm. For every mistake we make, grace abounds. And so will you turn and say, I'm humanity and you're humanity, and I failed and you failed, and he's given me grace. I give you grace.
Well, that's just it. I think the best relationships are those in which forgiveness is central. Realizing that the amend-making process, seeking forgiveness from those you've hurt and wounded, is an ongoing part of that process. We're never going to do relationship perfectly. And so therefore, I think it's important, especially as men, for us to be the initiators of seeking that forgiveness and humbling ourselves and saying, you know, listen, I blew it. Will you forgive me? You know, and I think I want to combine the next two, where we're talking about getting away from this idea of our thinking being about me.
What about me?
Yeah, about me.
Yeah.
And also the idea that in the past I didn't see my own small selfish actions. That's part of that about me thinking. And this gets into a discussion, I think, on the issue of rights.
Yes.
And you know what, Stephen, if people want to get my blood to boil, just start talking about rights that husbands and wives have. No, you are to be one. We are to strive toward unity and oneness, and we are on the same team. We gave ourselves to one another to do life together. In essence, we laid down our individual rights so that we could now be a collective person, really. We do things together now. We don't do things separate from one another. It's not my money and her money. It's not, you know, my car and her car. And these types of things that subtly get into our minds, where we're still trying to create separateness. And I think this about me thinking really does that. And it's kind of like I mentioned before, we got to go from me thinking to we thinking. We're not just an individual anymore. We've got to think as a unit.
So that, what about me or my rights? It's interesting because You think of the day you stand before God, and will you be saying, well, what about my rights?
Right.
You know, you have no rights as a Christian. You know, we're servants, right? We forfeited that thinking. We're about oneness and serving and leading in the kingdom and Christ-likeness. We forfeited our rights to stand up and demand whatever we want to feed ourselves. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the next one we want to talk about is the idea of being ready and willing to hear your wife. You know, it's one thing for us to say, oh, I'm listening, and you've got the computer open or you're watching the TV or whatever. But one thing I've learned from my wife is she needs to feel that she is being heard. It's not enough for me to be able to just say that, oh, I can recite back to you the exact words you've said. No. It's eye contact. It's hearing her. And guys, let me tell you when you know you have heard your wife. When she says that she feels like you've heard her.
That's good.
If you just say, I heard you. But
in
she
from
doesn't,
the other room. I heard what you said. Why do I have to come in there?
But she doesn't feel like you've really heard her.
Yeah.
Then you haven't heard her. Even if you could recite the words verbatim that she said to you. Does that make sense, Stephen?
Yes, I think it makes a lot of sense. She gets to be the judge, and you get to be the student and the learner of her. And women need to talk and express and to kind of work out issues verbally. And being heard is very satisfying, and it's a part of how she's made. So
one thing you can do, and I think this is really helpful, is just make eye contact. Make eye contact when she's speaking to you, because that's one thing that my wife has said to me a lot, and I've heard from other women. I feel like you're hearing me when you are looking at me.
Good. Not looking at the paper going, I'm listening. My ears are with you. My eyes are over here. No. That's good.
And this next one's pretty convicting for me, but I think it's really important. The idea of, listen, if you want to really improve your relationship, give up the idea of thinking it's about winning. Give up this competitive notion. And this is really difficult for me because I think relationally, my wife and I can be pretty competitive with one another. And sometimes it just rises up out of me without me even realizing it. And you know, my wife will say something to me and I'm just kind of defensive. And she's like, what on earth were you defensive about? Why on earth are you feeling like that was an attack? Or why are you, you know? And I just have to realize, you know what? I've got to give up this idea that it's about trying to conquer something.
And compete and win.
Yeah, yes. Relating is not about winning. It's about closeness. It's about moving toward one another. And whenever you have a win or loser mentality, you're actually moving away from each other. Because to have a win or loser mentality means somebody's a winner and somebody's a loser.
Right. And you know, it's interesting because competition is a big part of who we are. Competing, winning, getting ahead, being number one. But cooperation is the other side of that coin, which is how do we work together? How do we cooperate? How do the two of us become one? And so that we take the family along so that everybody wins. Because I've always thought, if you're the head of the household and you win, it should mean everyone in your household wins. That's cooperative. If you win for your own glory, then the family loses.
Stephen, for sake of time, let's jump to the goal here. And the goal really in making relationships better is to be 100% connected. Make a comment on that as we close.
Well, I mean, I think God's favorite number is one. One body, one fellowship, one sacrifice. He talked about oneness between the Father and the Son and the Spirit being one. The goal is complete oneness or connectedness. And so I think God's favorite number is one. And he wants us to live like we're one.
That's great. Well, we hope that these broadcasts have been helpful for you, just generating some ideas and getting your mind stirring about what you can begin to do to really improve your relationships. Folks, if you've got ideas that you'd like to send to us, please do that. Just send them to us at, you can send them to us at mypoint@puresexradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. And again, you can get all of our broadcasts at puresexradio.com. And we look forward to having you back here again next week when you come at you with the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
You've been listening to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Learn more about our show at puresexradio.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial support of listeners like you. Our mailing address is coming up. Get your pens ready. You can also contact us by phone at 1-800-49-PURITY. That's 1-800-49-PURITY. Our mailing address for your notes and donations is Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 401, San Antonio, Texas 78217. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.